We're backstage now with David Bilger, principal trumpet of the Philadelphia Orchestra. You're playing in the Haydn, this program.
Yes, the only piece on this program that has trumpets is the Haydn Symphony No. 101.
And is there a difference in the way people approach works by people like Haydn today from the way you may have learned it growing up?
Well, there was a huge movement in mostly starting in the 1980s and going forward of trying to really understand performance practice of pieces of earlier music by playing them on earlier instruments. And there are a number of really fine orchestras that have sprouted up in the last generation or so that perform on early instruments. And since music doesn't exist in a vacuum, we that play modern instruments are affected by what we've learned through experimenting with early instruments.
And the early instruments were typically played in small, more intimate settings. Is that right?
Well, there were no concert halls. I mean, the music was all intended to be played either in courts of royalty or in large patrons' homes or sometimes in churches, depending on who commissioned the piece or what the function would be. But for instance, in the brass instruments, the instruments did not have valves because technologically they hadn't been invented yet. The string instruments use different sort of bows and a different grip on the bow. And the woodwinds instruments were also completely different. So there's been an evolution sort of in the physics of the instruments, how we make them and therefore how we produce the sounds on them, as well as just a style of playing.
So can you give an example with the trumpet, how it would have sounded and what the instrument would have been like in Haydn's time and what it's like now?
Well, the instrument that we currently use has three valves and is coiled and is actually shorter than the old instruments. To be able to get the notes out on the old instruments, they were actually longer and they were valveless. And if you have ever seen like a woodcut or an old painting of a trumpet holding something that looked like it was a couple of feet long and had a banner hanging from it, that sort of gives you an idea of what the instruments of that age looked like.
So could you talk about your experience playing this symphony in different settings with different conductors in a large orchestra and in a small orchestra? And what will we hear today?
Well, oftentimes large orchestras will have a sort of a more grand concept of older music, especially Mozart, Haydn, and even before, where we play it with sort of a modern eye. So there'll be some vibrato or more vibrato. There'll be sort of more grand gestures, more sustain in the long notes, sort of a nod to the Romanticism, which is sort of the benchmark of of the Philadelphia Orchestra. But we also have become more flexible in what we do. And part of it is the way we look at this earlier music, and it's also when we bring in conductors like Maestro Igar, who is a specialist in early music. He bridges that gap between bringing in an early instrument sensibility and playing it on modern instruments. So we sort of have one foot in both worlds. So we'll play with smaller forces in the strings. So there'll be actually a smaller number of players on the stage to represent more of what was proper in that day. He talked some about limiting the use of vibrato, especially in the strings. And in the back rows, the horns and the trumpets and timpani, there's a little bit more variety. Some of it is a little spikier in terms of how we put the fronts of the notes. It's sort of like using more consonants in our speech like that. But some other places he wanted to be very lyrical as well. So there's sort of a much more broadness of expression that comes from allowing the spikier and more less polished sometimes approach to the fronts of the notes. And it works actually great to bring out sort of the humanity and the humor, especially in something like Haydn 101.
What do you mean? Can you give me an example of something that you play that where you can kind of tap into that humor?
Well, for instance, the clock movement, the second movement, it starts off with just eighth notes, bup, 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 which is supposed to sound like the ticking of a clock. At the first rehearsal, the maestro said, well, grandfather clocks in that era were not machined so well. They were not made quite so well. So I don't want the eighth notes to be metronomically even. I don't want them to be bup, bup, bup. I want the second one always to come just a little early. Bup, 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 bup. So the clock is ticking. It's not equal, but it represents more of what was happening in the era, which was actually quite a challenge to think about rhythm differently. And it made for some pretty funny experiments in rehearsal where people maybe took it a little too far, and then he's saying, well, you know, the clock is still keeping time. Until we finally found this group way of moving those eighth notes in a different manner. And that's sort of an example of bringing in this informed performance practice into the modern concert hall.
It sounds fun. Now, it was a smaller orchestra as well. Are there two people on each woodwind and brass part?
There are, yes. It's pairs in the winds. No trombones, no tuba. The only percussion was a timpani. So it's a much smaller group. And with that, it allows you some freedom to sort of interact in a way that is much more fun. For instance, Maestro Igar said, all right, well, keep an eye on me in the concerts because we're going to do things differently every day. The dynamics will be different on the repeats. These symphonies have repeats of sections just to show the overall form. And sometimes on the repeats, he would make a gesture and bring us down to very, very soft dynamic and put a crescendo in a different place and do all sorts of things that are just sort of in the moment, very much improvisatory. And I believe that is probably what was happening back in the day. Clearly in the Baroque era, the players were given just a huge amount of latitude, not only with dynamics because very little is written in the parts, but to put in more notes they would ornament. The classical period, there's a little bit more on the page in terms of dynamics, but there still isn't a lot. We don't see a lot of crescendos and diminuendos, and some of it is just left up to the performer to figure out what goes where. And he's been encouraging us to watch like hawks because he's been taking a lot of liberties with where dynamics change, and we have to be totally reactive to him, which is something that we can do, especially be more flexible with these smaller forces on the stage.
And this afternoon's concert will be different still.
It will be, and we're going to be watching carefully and wondering what he's going to do, which, of course, will make this afternoon's concert even more spontaneous, which makes it more fun for the audience as well.
Great. Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.